Bill, would like to ask you to stay on the line. We're going to bring up now Dmitry Orlov. He's the author of Reinventing Collapse, The Soviet Example and American Prospects. Dmitry has been on the show before, and welcome back to Equal Time.
Great to be with you, Carl.
So, Dmitry, you've got kind of a crystal ball as well. It doesn't involve this modified Delphi method. Tell us about how your crystal ball works.
Well, my crystal ball doesn't really involve too many experts, because experts tend to be, you know, sheltered, blinkered people who are, you know, self-serving. You can ask, you know, somebody who is, you know, very high on information technology, and they'll tell you that information technology is the future. Or you can ask a nanotechnologist about nanotechnology, and of course they'll tell you that it's the greatest stuff on Earth. But I was listening to that whole discussion, and I got a kind of a queasy feeling, because here we are, you know, a lot of people are having trouble heating their houses. You know, a lot of people are losing their houses. They're doubling up, you know, living in their parents' basements, or, you know, getting into roommate situations where they're a little too old for that sort of thing. Or a lot of people end up, you know, out on the street with their children. People are losing their jobs, you know, 1 million new unemployed a month, roughly. And what are we talking about? Space tourists?
Isn't it possible that the two of those can go on at once? That you can have the Richard Bransons of the world sending up a few of these billionaires to take some orbital flights at the same time that more and more people are going homeless?
Yeah, and it's just that I'm just, call me a humanitarian, but I'm not interested.
You're not interested in seeing space tourism develop?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really care what millionaires do with their money. They could fly to outer space, or they could set their money on fire. You know, it doesn't really matter. They're obviously not doing anything useful with it.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the way that that you look at the U.S. trajectory now, from your basis observing the Soviet Union over an interesting period in its history, and the end of its history.
Well, there are a lot of circles of denial that you sort of have to penetrate to get at something resembling reality, or the truth, or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, there's a great similarity in overall trajectories. One of those is resource depletion, and I talked about that in, you know, quite a few places. But basically, when high quality fossil fuel energy becomes scarce, here in terms of imports, in Russia in terms of being able to pump enough oil for export, you know, that spells a major cataclysm for industrial society. And another problem is that empires get into the state where they have, and the Soviet Empire and the American Empire are both in that state, where basically their investment in defense results in, you know, a military that is very expensive but cannot win a single conflict anywhere in the world.
Dmitry, could you speak closer to your head, your telephone?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
And you know, those are just two, and then another one is society goes deeper and deeper into debt, and at some point it becomes obvious that the debt cannot be repaid. So all of those things are very much aligned between the USSR and the USA. And what we're witnessing right now is the inability of the government to actually grasp what's going on, just as Perestroika failed. You know, this new round of bailouts and economic stimuli, et cetera, is going to fail, because it can't really grasp the underlying problem, which is the old way of doing things is completely just over. You know, it's no longer viable, and they don't know what to do next.
William Hallel, what's your response to that?
Well, Dmitry's right. This could be what happens. I don't discount that at all, but I think it's unlikely. I don't think that's going to be the outcome. I you know, it seemed to me an unduly pessimistic interpretation. I think society's adjusting to this, and I think we will adjust. It may be a difficult transition. I don't think it'll be as difficult a transition as the transition the Soviets made in moving from a planned economy to a market economy. That took, what, about a decade, Dmitry?
there wasn't any transition to a market economy. There was a transition to basically a state-controlled system of very large monopoly enterprises that, through a very corrupt system, then trickled down money into various other little enterprises that served them.
Yeah, the oligarchs.
Resembling,
that was roughly similar to the economic system this country had at the turn of the 20th century, in the 20s, the 10s and 20s.
I don't think so. I think it was just something that was more in line with the Russian pattern of doing things, and it came out of Russian culture, not American culture.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. I understand that. But, I mean, it was concentrated, big concentrated corporations, oligopolies. One or two corporations dominated industry. But I understand that Russian culture is different. I don't mean to imply otherwise. That's true. It's kind of a... Russians seem to prefer a more authoritarian state. You know, many nations do, many cultures do. And it seems that's the way I understood it. Maybe I have that wrong. But anyways, it was about a decade for the Soviets for Russia to overcome that very difficult transition, I think. Is that right, roughly?
Well, basically, it took them quite a while to get oil production ramped up again and to start exporting oil. And that coincided with a period of high oil prices.
Right.
And the whole commodities run-up that happened.
Right.
And that made them very rich.
Yeah.
So that allowed them to accumulate foreign currency and gold reserves.
Yes. The oil reserves were an enormous asset. But Russia is now an industrialized nation. It's a functioning economic system. It's not the same thing as other industrialized nations, but it's a functioning industrial society. And... I think it's pretty remarkable how relatively well that went. You have lots of automobiles on the highways. People have jobs. There's a middle class, all of that. And I think that was a really heroic thing that they had to do. I was there when the Berlin Wall came down and perestroika was going on. I was there. It was a celebratory time. It was very exciting. And it's too bad it didn't work out as well as it should have. But even though that was so heroic, what they had to do, I don't think what we're facing here in the West is of that magnitude. We simply have to improve on the present market system that is now in place. We have to do a lot of changes to it.
Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist who writes a column for the New York Times, has been scratching his head publicly recently and metaphorically, wondering how the world and the U.S. are going to get out of this economic downturn. He looks to Japan at the so-called lost decade of the 1990s and said, well, they managed to grow their way out of that by increasing their exports. And then he looks at the whole world going into an economic downturn.
Right.
And saying, who are we going to export to when everybody's going through the downturn?
Yeah.
So we got very smart people and well-informed people like Krugman scratching their heads saying, I'm not sure how we're going to get out of this. And that's maybe a difference between the Soviet Union, which used the boom of the 1990s, the dot-com boom and otherwise that you were talking about, to get an export-led economic recovery.
Let me speak to that. I think the environmental problems are going to lead the world out of this. I think there's a good chance that could happen. Our forecasts indicate that green business is going to take off in 3 to 5 years, and the environment, the climate change problem will be addressed as well. And that coincides with this 35-year cycle. So we may be wrong, but my best estimate is that we're going to see the economy... start coming out of this recession around the world in 3 to 3 years or so, and things are going to return to stability when the credit markets loosen up, and then the need to do something about energy and environment is going to seem paramount, and that's going to be the next big growth cycle, which will start about 2015. And the markets will anticipate that. The stock market will break new ground, new highs, a year or so before that. And that's the schedule that we see.
If you're just tuning in, we've got quite the brain trust here on Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettinger. I won't count myself in the brain trust, but we've got William Hillel on the line, author of Technology's Promise, Expert Knowledge on the Transformation of Business and Society, and Dmitry Orlov, the author of Reinventing Collapse, The Soviet Example and American Prospects. If you'd like to ask them anything, the number here is 244-1777. Toll-free, it's 877-291-8255. 8255. And I'd like to go to you, Dmitry, to ask you about your response to what Bill just said about green technologies leading a revival of the economy.
Again, I'm listening to this, and I can't figure out what planet I'm on. I mean, yes, we're going into a period of incredible global climate upheaval. And you have to keep in mind that the only reason we exist on Earth in such huge numbers now is because the climate has been unusually steady for the past 10,000 years, which allowed us to develop agriculture and grow our numbers into the billions. And once that period is over, agriculture, as we've known it, will no longer work. We're looking at decades upon decades of failed harvests until people actually give up on that. There is a way to deal with it, which is grow lots of things in lots of places at the same time. There's the permaculture movement that plans to plant edible forest gardens in a lot of places so that people can pretty much, instead of farming intensively, they can take care of the land and glean what they need to survive from that land, which may allow humanity to continue to exist. And then on top of that, we have to look at rapid deindustrialization, because based on the availability of fossil fuels, which is what drives our industrial societies, there's no replacement for them of any sort, those will dwindle. And if you do the math based on the latest forecast from, for instance, the International Energy Administration, it looks like the half-life of industrial civilization can be capped at about 17 years. So really, that means that we have to go through a process of rapid dismantling. As far as the idea that we're going to have endless economic growth on a finite planet, having destroyed so much of it already, I think that that's a preposterous idea as well.
William Hillel?
Well, I think the big problem right now is the lack of a vision. I'm going to use that word. It's, you know, the word that strategic planners always use, and it's a common word. We know that now. I don't think there's a clear vision of where the world is going, and that is what's crucial to restore confidence and to get the economies of the world working again. And, Dmitry, I'm sorry, but I just don't think we're going to – I just don't like that vision that you seem to think is most likely. I don't think it's a retrograde vision. It takes us back into agrarian society. I don't think the world's going to do that.
I don't think that there's much of a chance for agrarian society. As I said,
yeah, you don't even
think
that's possible.
We're heading out of a period of time when agriculture was really viable.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I think a positive vision is very likely, and I think the challenge now is to articulate that vision in a way that makes sense to people and to make it plausible. It has to be reasonable. And that would go a long way. That would go a very long way to restoring confidence in the way economic systems work and to get the world working again.
So,
well,
William,
I agreed with you up to the point when you started talking about economic systems. I really believe in articulating a positive vision for people to follow, to give them something they can start doing today and keep doing every day to make their lives better moving
uh-huh.
forward. What that has to do with economic systems, I think that would be an irrelevant, sort of non sequitur.
Let's hear, as we wrap down this segment of the program, let's hear about your respective positive visions for the future at the level of the individual, beginning with you, William Hillel. I'm a young person, or maybe a recently unemployed person who has some time on my hands now, thinking what to do with my life. What would you advise me to be doing?
Well, I think information technology is going to continue to dominate our lives. It's going to increase in its power. The world is being unified, really, by these powerful information systems. We're creating a a global intelligence, really. The whole world is being unified by this. That's why globalization is taking place. And so that is, and that's where young people thrive. They have been bred for this world. And they are now being identified as the first globals, the first generation of people who see the world as a whole and who want to be citizens of the world, and they want to make it a sustainable world. They are articulating the new vision, really, but we're not paying much attention to them.
So keep up with the latest in information technology. Get that iPhone.
Well, no, not the
Twitter.
Latest. A lot of this is frou-frou. I fully think, like Twitter. I get apoplectic, at the time and energy that's wasted. I don't use a cell phone myself. I have shunned a cell phone because I can get along fine without it, and I make a point of not using technology excessively. But I think the system, the information technology is extremely powerful. It is revolutionary. It is changing the world.
Dmitry Orlov, what positive vision would you give to a young person, a recently unemployed person, saying this is how it'd be a good idea for you to be spending your time right now?
Well, first of all, shut down that computer because it's coal-fired. You know, it adds to global warming because the electricity is mostly coal-generated. Then get to know people around you. Actually interact people face-to-face instead of through some widget. Learn some real skills. Learn how to hunt or grow food, how to make things with your own hands, because those will be the valuable skills. Learn how to be a real capitalist in terms of knowing what your capital is, independent of anyone else. Make yourself as self-sufficient as possible, along with the people that you care about. Start figuring out how to take care of the land yourself using things that you know instead of listening to some expert.
We're going to take a short break in just a minute and continue with Dmitry Orlov. William Hallel, we'll give you the last word for this part of the show.
Well, I like what Dmitry says. I'm so attracted to the idea of living softly on the earth. I think that's marvelous. I think that's wonderful, and I think we should do it. And I think that is going to be part of the solution, but I don't think we're going to forsake an industrial, technologically advanced civilization. I think that is just such a powerful, it's the direction which civilization has moved in for hundreds of years, and it almost seems predetermined. And that's why space tourism, although it seems a little silly, is really not looking at that trajectory, because that's going to be the frontier in about 20 or 50 years.
Bill Hallel, author of Technology's Promise, thanks for joining us today. I'm Carl Ettner. You're listening to Equal Time on WDEV. We'll be back right after this.